Thank you, Alison, and hi everybody. It's a real pleasure to be here. And as Alison said, we had this discussion along very similar lines in February. And so I'm hopeful that we'll be able to reach some kind of consensus, if not about issues and theories and the way that we approach politically these different issues, but at least on the way that we treat each other and on the way that we speak about each other and move forward. And knock on the head this what appears to be a phobia about having differences of opinion. And this is what seems to have happened in certainly in the past decade, maybe a little bit longer. That identity politics, which to me is like the old 1980s identity politics, but without the politics, has taken over on, issues that are of grave importance to deal with. And whatever your position, our position on the sex industry and whether it's harmful or whether it's labour, on gender, whether it's a social construction or whether it's innate, on religious fundamentalism, whether it's the woman's right to wear a full face veil, or whether it's oppression of women, all of these issues that seem to have just created an absolute hellish cesspit of vitriol. It's almost irrelevant what your position is. What we need to get out of this discussion by the end of today, hopefully, or at least agree that we'll continue to try. Is that we move forward constructively, that those of us that identify as being on the progressive left recognise that there are far bigger fish to fry in terms of getting this current government out of office than it is arguing over who's whorephobic. So that's just my personal, I suppose, aim for today. And I want to start with a little bit of the history of how this no platforming of radical feminism began by using a bit of my story and bringing in stories of other women who have been similarly targeted later down the line. And I just want to make two things clear before I do that. One is this isn't about me at all. I've become a kind of, what's the word, a straw dog or I've just become a whipping girl. I now kind of represent all that is, as far as those on the other side of me, my debate, of all that is wrong with anything to do with feminism that names men and men's violence as the problem, right? So this isn't about me. I just happen to have been the target of most of it. And this also isn't about the transgender issue. It really isn't. It's about whether or not you take a neoliberal approach to certain feminist issues or whether you take a radical approach to certain feminist issues. Now, that's my view. And so this is something that is absolutely up for grabs in terms of this debate and discussion. But what it is, from my point of view, and how I see it with my eyes, having been involved in this movement for 35 years, is that it's the perfect arena for a backlash against radical feminism, which we'll go into a little bit later in terms of what it is, just in case you think it's something that it isn't. In other words, it means that white straight men can stand up in any political context or social context or on social media and scream whorephobe, transphobe at those of us that actually, prioritize ending violence against women and children, but still be seen as progressives. So those men have got free rein to do that. And unfortunately, because this is the nature of women's oppression, we're the only oppressed group that's required or expected to love our oppressor, is that they are aided and abetted by a number of women, either because those women are also threatened by or hate radical feminism, radical feminists, or because, and we're going to talk about this later on, they are maybe new to the movement or young or both, and are bullied and battered down if they don't say, yes, you're right, Bindle, et cetera, is whorephobic, transphobic, Islamophobic, biphobic, et cetera. So that to me is what this is about. And bearing in mind that we have a chronic situation all over the world with violence against women and children, oppression and discrimination of women and children by men, by the male ruling class. I wonder if we can come up with some answers as to why radical feminists ourselves are now the enemy, are now the oppressors, and pretty much anyone else who takes a neoliberal view or an individualistic view is now the oppressed. That oppression doesn't have to now be rooted in anything material or structural. It can literally just be the politics of the personal. I'm polyamorous, you're oppressing me, is something that, you know, I've heard on several occasions. And so those with much privilege who are, you know, Oxbridge educated, white people, have now located themselves as the oppressed because of some weird queer Judith Butlerite notion that everything's a floating signifier and nothing really matters except for the personal experience. So when feminists said the personal is political, we definitely didn't mean that. Okay, so really briefly, because I'm so bored with this. In 2004, I wrote an article, and it was seen as offensive, and bits of it were offensive. And I used language and humour that was inappropriate. And yes, I would write it differently now, for sure. I was angry. I was very new to journalism. In fact, I wasn't actually a journalist at the time. Doesn't take away any responsibility. But it was stupid, and it was also unlucky in a way, because it was pretty much the first time that The Guardian started putting up things from Guardian Weekend magazine online. And so those that had said far worse things than me before kind of went, I mean, good for them. It kind of just didn't really get any airing. And I honestly think, well, in fact, I know that because I'm who I am, and by then I was already quite well known as a feminist for having radical views, it was a great opportunity for the pylon. So the pylon began. It has never ended. It never will end. It will never end, so that's just something that I accept. But what happened after that was a kind of a beginning of a response to feminist politics with me as a conduit. So everywhere I went to speak about sexual violence, there was a crowd outside screaming and shouting, she's a transphobe. And very, very quickly, it started to be combined with the pro-sex work lobby. So almost immediately, trans people would turn up, trans women, never trans men, trans women would turn up screaming transphobe, and whorephobe. And the issue, there were two issues there. One is that many trans women said that they, because they had been involved in survival sex work, that therefore I was being doubly oppressive to them, saying that prostitution is an abusive, oppressive industry. And there were also pro-sex workers' rights activists who saw the opportunity to give me a good kick in the gut, who turned up in order to shout alongside them. And these two issues became completely indivisible. So if I was put up for an award, which I never asked to be, they would be bullying the sponsors, emailing the sponsors, trying to get the venue to shut it down. And this was as early as 2006. I would turn up at conferences outside of the UK, and this very small lobby of trans people that, as far as I'm concerned, do not represent trans people at all, would organise the picket, would organise the screaming and shouting and banging on the windows. And this was when I and my colleagues were trying to discuss how to reduce sexual violence towards women and children. It was not because I was speaking about this issue. I have, however, spoken about transgenderism when I've been invited, and there's always been transgender people with me on the panel, and it's often been at the invitation of trans people, and others will try and get that debate shut down, and those trans people that wish to have that discussion and debate with me are screamed at and called transphobe themselves. Miranda will talk to you a little bit more about that, but I was counting on the train on the way here the number of trans women that I have as friends outnumber the actual lobby, the actual physical lobby of those who are creating this shitstorm, which is quite interesting. And some of those friends are friends on social media. Some are actual friends that I've met, like in the old days, you know, when I was a girl. So I'm not doing that. Some trans women are my friends. No, it's just that I get lots of emails from trans women saying, God, this is shit. This is shit. But if we say anything, then there's a pile on with us. And bearing in mind that the trans community is so small and so vilified, it's not surprising. You know, we know how that feels. So that's how it panned out. And then it was a kind of a bit of a lonely place. There was me, Janice Raymond, who wrote The Transsexual Empire, Sheila Jeffries, and maybe one other prominent radical feminist who were vilified and who had their employers written to and who had grant givers written to say withdraw that grant because this person is contravening your equal opportunities policy. And that happened to me all the time, every single grant or editor or anything I had. It still does happen. But then some younger women, interestingly mainly heterosexual, just said, fuck this with this gender nonsense. What's all this female brain and male brain? You know, we're not having this. Of course we'll stand in front of any trans person who's being vilified and bullied and attacked. Because that's oppression, cruelty, bullying. But we don't have to buy into this brain sex thing. We don't have to abandon socialist and radical feminist theory and principles, which is that gender is a social construction, which is how patriarchy works. So it wasn't a matter of being personally vitriolic towards individual trans people. It was just saying, of course, be as you wish. I mean, you know, we were talking earlier, Miranda and another trans woman friend, about misgendering. And I said, I will refer to you as she and woman because I reject the term for me. It's all made up. It's all nonsense. I don't know what it feels like to be a woman. I really don't. I know what it feels like to be treated as a woman. But I was born a baby, just like everyone else. And, you know, so of course I'll use the pronoun she. It's basic manners. And it doesn't exist anyway. So these young women started to say, we've had enough of this, being told that there's such a thing as brain sex and that gender is the same as sex and that we have to abandon everything that we believe in and we have to abandon everything from, you know, Simone de Beauvoir and everything since, where we've tried to suggest that an end to patriarchy can only come when you say everybody can live free of gender constraints and gender rules that benefit men and oppress women, but that also harm men. You know, men are quite unhappy under patriarchy often, as we've heard from pro-feminist men. So that started to really whip up the frenzy. Right, so because there were now quite a few feminists who dared to say, no, no, gender isn't innate. No, 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 the sex industry isn't great. There was a hell of a kerfuffle. And although left and liberal publications always published much more pro-trans, pro-sex work articles than they did the opposite, the second a feminist got her article in somewhere, say like the New Statesman, there was a huge outcry, as though it's not allowed to be said. There is no debate allowed. There is no dissent allowed. And then I started hearing from a number of students, female and a couple of male, who would say, you know, you've just been no-platformed from our university. You may not know this, but here's a copy of the minutes where it was decided. The majority of us didn't want you to be no-platformed, but it was carried through by the gender officer or the trans officer or the queer officer or whatever the fuck. And therefore, you're banned again. And I'd like you to know on what lines. And it was that they couldn't have me speaking because, and as one piece of evidence went around the email to prove their point, these people that were banning me, I'm whorephobic, transphobic, biphobic and Islamophobic. And the articles that they chose to highlight this was me saying about transgender that this doesn't stand up as a medical diagnosis from the 50s because gender is a social construction. Whorephobia was the sex trade really harms women and girls. Islamophobia was, along with many of my Muslim-born sisters and colleagues, were saying that the veil is a symbol of women's oppression, like the nun's habit, etc. And the biphobia was me saying, I don't quite get why bisexual people are saying to lesbians that we are oppressing them. I mean, it was just, you know, debatable stuff. Some might even say controversial stuff. but definitely not hate speech and definitely not violent speech. So these women who emailed me would say, we don't know what to do because we can't speak out. The last student who spoke out in favour of you, just to say, I'd like to hear her speak, was sacked as her from her position as officer in the Feminist Society. Another one, I was told, who innocently sent around an article I'd written about rape and the low conviction rate, was screamed at by the male safe space officer that she was a transphobe and a whorephobe because she sent something around that was written by me. So I have become toxic. So it's not that my transphobia or whorephobia, in their view, is toxic. I am toxic. And then when I would go to universities, invited by staff rather than the NUS, because, of course, the NUS no platform me, and the NUS make sure that other student bodies lose their funding from them if they invite me, I would go onto campus. Like, for example, last time I was at Essex University, I was invited to debate a pornographer. And the stuff that came around, the usual petition. I mean, I must say change.org has really benefited from this row, that online petition thing. I mean, they're so busy with it all. But anyway, this petition went round, banned Julie Bindle from campus, her presence on campus for Muslim students, queer students, bi students, polyamorous students, sex working students and trans students will be an act of violence. And this is all online, all for you to see. I don't even need to exaggerate, which is breaking my heart, because that's what I love doing more than anything. And they were saying that I was a physical danger, and I realised at that point that what's going on with student politics is that this neoliberalism that we're living under has given them the opportunity to think that they're doing great activist work and are achieving a huge amount by stopping actual violence on campus without stopping violence on campus, because it's too big a job, because then you'd have to stop all the men from raping the women, and but just by banning me, because I am violence. So I went in onto Essex University campus and I meet the pornographer on the train and we politely say hello. And this is a man who has produced porn for years, has given awards to porn sites such as exploitedafricans.com, which completely pornifies women coming from Congo on boats that have to be fucked by anyone because they've got no choice because they've got no papers. And then there's another one which is a parody of the John Warboys taxi rapist. Do you know who he is? And this man's given awards to these porn sites, and I'm there getting ready to debate him. And we're walking through campus, and I see this ragbag group of students who'd obviously got a bit late to, you know, meet me at the actual campus gates, shouting and screaming, transphobe, violent, phobic this, phobic that, at me. And I thought, well, we are living in Orwellian times as well as McCarthyite times. Because in what way is this pornographer walking through this campus with no dissent and no concern at all from these so-called feminist and pro-feminist students, and I'm being screamed at? And there you have it. That is the climate in which we're living. So as I say, whatever your view is on the sex industry, on gender, on anything, there's only one side being screamed down, and that's the feminist side. I don't mean the fun feminists, the pole dancing, the way to liberation feminists. I mean the feminists like me, miserable, hard-faced, going on about men all the time, being abusers and shit. And now we have an absolute, as I say, phobia about debate. There seems to be the view that there is a right not to be offended. The fact that we can be offended, which I am at least 100 times a day, is now being seen as violence, so that we experience it as internalised violence, and we are triggered, and we are traumatised. And I am my own trigger warning, which I found. There was something, article, trigger warning, Julie Bindle. So what do we do? What do we do? I'm not going to talk for much longer, because what I want to do is obviously hand over to Miranda and have a discussion and find ways forward. But recently, and I think that these two events that have been organised on our behalf are a big part of this. And I thank the organisers very, very much for putting these on, because I know that the hassle that you get for doing that, so thank you. But I think the tide is starting to turn, because younger or newer feminists are realising that they now have no opportunity to learn from the rest of us. And we, in turn, are not able to learn from newer and younger feminists, because we're not allowed to be in each other's spaces, each other's campuses, even each other's living rooms, and say, what do you think about that? Why do you think that sex work can be liberating? And they're not able to say to me, what evidence do you have that legalisation of the sex industry's failed? And we're not able to talk about gender anymore, which was the basis of socialism and feminism when we looked at how capitalism, you know, wielded families, wielded patriarchy, etc. So it's really harmful to the left, as well as feminism in general. And when the left now has this weird, like I say, Orwellian view of everything's topsy-turvy, the sex trade is empowering to women. In what way does capitalism not come into this? But there you go. That there's no such thing. That obviously there's a male brain and a female brain. In what way are you pro-equality if you think that we're different but equal? When people said that about black people and white people, there was rightly so an outcry. That the full face veil is not in any way a symbol of oppression to women. When there were women in Saudi Arabia, Pakistan, elsewhere who were saying, stop marching with these crazy fundamentalists who are fascists and support us. So the left has become, in a way, the new right. And that's why I talk about neoliberalism. We have no consistency within the left anymore, because we've been battered down to take a view that anyone that says, me, 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 I'm a Muslim woman and I have the right to do this. Me, 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 I'm a sex worker. Me, 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 I'm a trans woman who knows I was born in the wrong body. That we have no right now to challenge that orthodoxy. And this is what the left is built on. And so unless we actually start to chip away at that, challenge it and be brave enough to stand up and disagree with it, then this will affect a damn sight more than me and a few others that are the targets, radical feminism in general, and the left in total. Because the right wing, I see this all online, they are laughing at us so much. I mean, they're writing some actually quite good and funny stuff about this whole nonsense. You know, the Stepford students, and, you know, they are absolutely laughing all their way to the election, because we have been disabled by fear and by bullying and by this monolithic crazy view that what is actually oppressive is the new liberation. So that's all I want to say for now. And I'll hand back to you, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you.